Yep. From the Chiefs NFL, we have Michael Boyle, Keith Davidson, Christy Spain, Stephen Deerhage, Dan Jukic, Patricia Poblete, Nigel Roberts, Scottie Sparks LeBlanc. And from Liaisons, we have Cheryl Langdon Orr and Cynthia Sutnanan. From Staff Support and Special Advisors, we have Jap Ackerhuis, Bart Boswinkel, Christina Nordstrom, and Bernie Turcott. And Paul has just joined as well. Apologies from Eberhard for joining late. That's it.
Okay, thank you. And did someone just join?
That was Paul.
Okay. So that seems to be a fairly inclusive list. Anyone on the call whose name wasn't mentioned? Any apologies received by anyone else? If not, can we turn to item 2 on the agenda, confirmation of the agenda? I haven't heard any requests for any changes. Is everything in order to proceed?
All good.
Thank you. Okay, we'll move to item 3 on the agenda, the confirmation of the meeting report for 18 October. It's there on screen, and I think it's scrollable for everybody. I don't see any issues that aren't otherwise covered on the agenda. Does anyone have any issues? Is there anything from those notes that isn't otherwise covered? Okay, thank you. We'll move on to item 4, revocation 4.2, and thanks for circulating the new draft, Bernie. I guess perhaps the best way we could progress this, Bernie, is to have a look at some of the new text before we revisit the revising text. I know Becky and Nigel are still working on some pieces of revision and so on, so perhaps if we turn to the new text first and see if we can progress through as much of that as possible. So over to you, Bernie.
Thank you, sir. Yes, the new text will be in section 5.3 of the document. The dog coming in the house, I'm going to go on mute for a second. And I'm back. All right. Now, let's see, 524, 525, 526, 523. After going through it, after our meeting in Toronto, it seemed we could tease out some more out of Section 3.5 of RFC 1591, because we were really only on the last part of that, where in cases of persistent problems with the proper operation of the domain, the delegation may be revoked. So I included all of the text because after looking at it, I thought it might be relevant. So section 531 is a paragraph-by-paragraph copy of section 3.5 of RFC 1591, and we'll go through it just quickly to make sure we all remember it. The designated manager must do a satisfactory job of operating the DNS service for the domain. That is, the actual management of the assigning of domain names, delegating subdomains, and operating name servers must be done with technical competence. This includes keeping the central IR, in the case of the top-level domain, or other higher-level domain manager advised of the status of the domain, responding to requests in a timely manner, and operating the database with accuracy, robustness, and resilience. There must be a primary and a secondary name server that have IP connectivity to the internet and can be easily checked for operational status and database accuracy by the IR and the IANA. In cases when there are persistent problems with the proper operation of the domain, the delegation may be revoked and possibly delegated to another designated manager. So that's the whole text. And basically what we've done in section 5.3.2 is take a stab at looking at how all of that can fit together to provide some sort of guidance relative to getting to the last paragraph. So, trying to do a full dissection of this, 5, 3, 2, 1. Satisfactory job of operating the DNS service for the domain and proper operation of a domain are interpreted as being equivalent. There's a note under there in 53.211. A designated manager that has persistent problems with the proper operation of a domain is not doing a satisfactory job of operating the DNS service. And we'll see that we'll catch up those interpretations. So basically, satisfactory job of operating the DNS service and proper operation of the domain are considered the same, and therefore, if you have persistent problems with the proper operation of the domain, you're not doing a satisfactory job. Are we all okay up to 53.211? I see Martin.
Yes.
Martin, you must be muted, I think.
Yeah, I was just trying to find where the unmute button was. What you've done here is limit the definition of 3.5 as we move down to be only 3.5. I actually think that there is perhaps reason to see a difference between the satisfactory job of operating the DNS service and the proper operation of the domain, which I would then see as something that would also include the subsection 3, the designated manager must be equitable to all groups in the domain that request domain names. Now, that's certainly my interpretation of it, in that just sort of turning around and saying this is only the sort of technical operation seems to me to be limiting where in our interpretation of some of the other sections we have tended to see the whole text as going across and covering several of these subsections. So I'd like sort of a comment from you, an idea of how you think that actually works. Thanks.
Okay, I think before Benny responds, obviously get Nigel's point too. So Nigel,
a couple of things. I feel that what Martin's saying is what I was saying on a previous occasion and was shot down by Martin, so I'm a bit confused about this. Let's take the approach that we need to take. We can only interpret the actual words. We can't put any extras in there. It's a bit of a shame Becky's not on the call at the moment because we need to apply the rules of interpretation, not just put what we think should be in. It's clear from the context of this that this is relating to the technical operation of the DNS. That's not to say that there aren't other circumstances in other sections whereby you could say the ccTLD manager was not doing the job they were supposed to be doing. But from the point of view of persistent problems with the domain, that expression, it's clearly relating to the DNS, and I've been persuaded of that in the past, and I see no reason to change that.
Okay, thanks, Nigel. Bernie?
Thank you, sir. Relative to Martin's point, I have to side with Nigel, having read this thing backwards and forwards. And secondly, I think under substantial misbehavior, we actually cover the points you're talking about. So I don't see really the advantage of dragging it into this section or the advantage of killing ourselves arguing about it at this point. We will go back over Section 5.2. I am fairly confident that we will go over the exact points that Martin is making as being substantial misbehavior, but trying to stretch the interpretation of 3.5 of RFC 1591 to cover all of it, personally, I don't see it. Over to you, sir.
I think, reminding the group that to stretch it further than the words allow would be to be creating policy, not interpreting it. So we must be careful in that regard. Martin has re-raised his hand, and I think Nigel didn't take his hand down. So over to Martin, and if Nigel's hand remains up, I'll call on him afterwards. So Martin.
Thanks, Keith. I certainly see the separation of substantial misbehaviour from, bearing in mind we've had that big discussion on there. I think my concern is that we're actually talking about two separate processes. We've got a separate process that comes out under 4, to that which then comes out under 5. I don't feel convinced that what we've got in doing a satisfactory job of operating the DNS service for the domain can just be limited to the technical aspects of operating the domain. I'm feeling a little bit unhappy that what we're doing is we're just putting a ring fence around this and saying, well, yeah, okay, it's just a matter of the operating the primary and secondary name servers a certain number of other things, rather than it actually being, and I go back to that word in the first line, where it's operating the DNS service rather than just the DNS for the domain. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Martin. Nigel, you raised the hand for Nigel.
Thanks, Keith. I had put my hand down, but as excuse me, Martin continued to speak, I put it back up again. There is some support for Martin's position. But we are going back to a principle that I thought we disposed of on a much earlier call. And that's what I call the living instrument doctrine of interpretation of this. Without boring you too much where this comes from, there are two ways of looking at this document, RFC 1591. One is that you take the words that are in there and you attempt to interpret them and explain them as best we can. And where we identify that a document that was written in 1994 requires updating, we point out and recommend where a PDP is required. That's one approach. The other approach is the living instrument approach, which is used, for example, in the European Convention on Human Rights, which says that the words of the principal document are to be interpreted in the light of modern social standards. In other words, effectively, you are rewriting it on the fly by judicial decision. I originally, and I think it might have been in the delegation and redelegation working group, put forward the very view that Martin's putting forward, that proper operation of the domain in today's world must be judged by the standards of today's DNS industry or internet. So, for example, you could criticize a ccTLD manager who did not escrow or did not have six or seven name servers. This RFC 5091 requires only two, and so on and so on and so on. And I think we had this discussion. And I'm feeling that I must be mistaken when I think it was Martin who said who argued against it back then, but certainly others did, and I think Bernie was one too. And on the balance of things, I'm now persuaded that we should not be trying to have a creative interpretation of the policy documents, but to do our best to try and interpret the documents as they are written, conscious of the fact the time they were written. Most, if not all, ccTLD managers edited their own files by hand. I don't know if Bernie agrees with that or not.
But it's probably true, and it's probably likely that it would have been considered quite satisfactory to update your zone file once a week in those days. So what might have been proper once is hardly likely to be proper now. Okay, I see Chris has his hand raised, so Chris.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. Nigel, forgive me, I was listening to what you were saying and trying to get into the Adobe room at the same time. Are you saying that we should be treating it as a living document, or we shouldn't?
Nigel must be back on.
I'm just coming off mute. Now, my point was, at an earlier stage, I put forward the suggestion that we might use this method of living instrument, and I was howled down. So I wound my neck in and took the more comfortable and familiar route of literal interpretation.
I think I agree with you simply because the problem with treating it as a living document, which, and I acknowledge and accept that the concept, the problem of us doing that is that who treats it as a living document? And I'm not sure that we actually can do so. I think it's used normally in terms of the judiciary treating it as a living document rather than a bunch of ccTLD managers getting together and treating it as such. So I think I agree with you on that vote.
My fear in this is that we would be allowing an extension of interpretation to apply anywhere for anyone who felt they could interpret something more broadly. So perhaps we might be better to try and stick with a very tight interpretation in this instance. But Martin's obviously finding some difficulty with that in this instance. Anyway, I think back to Bernie. Oh, I see Chris.
No, I'll put my hand down as soon as I get back to my computer.
Okay, and Martin has just raised his hand then. So Martin, and I just note before handing over to Martin that Nigel has given a tick of endorsement. So Martin.
Yeah, I can't tick these because I'm on mobile, but yes.
I'll note your tick, Cheryl. So,
okay.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to widen the scope here, and I'm staying entirely neutral on the point of living documents or non-living documents. What I'm just putting my hand up about, I think, really comes down to the use of the word service in RSC 1591, which seems to me, and then later on in the text where you talk about the preparation of the domain, And that seems to me to be not just a reference to 3.5 of RFC 1591, but in fact to the whole of Section 3 of 1591. And what we're actually looking at here is that under 4 and under 5, there are two separate mechanisms that are identified, the one of IANA stepping in under 4, and here under revocation and possible delegation under 5. And so I'm just sort of questioning as to whether what we're doing here is being rather more restrictive than the words of RFC 1591 section 3.5 gives us reasonable cause to be. So I just flag it up, and I'm not greatly convinced by the technical answers that I've had so far on that. Thanks.
Okay, well, I think you're not gathering any momentum for a common position here. I think you seem to be a little bit on your own. But in any case, can we move on and just see where 5.3 takes us and see if we can get some more general agreement with the end points of 5.3. So thanks, Bernie.
Yes, sir. So moving on to 5.3.2.2, that is the actual management of the assigning of domain names, delegating subdomains, and operating name servers must be done with technical competence, and operating the database with accuracy, robustness, and resilience are interpreted as being equivalent. So basically trying to sort of line up those two parts of the text. And then when we go into trying to analyze this in 53.221, this is interpreted to mean that the designated manager must have a process or system that allows qualified potential registrants to easily and effectively register domain names and registrants to modify domain names as per the policies LD. Failure to provide such a method or system is interpreted as a problem with the proper operation of the domain. Under the next one, this is interpreted to mean that the designated manager must make a valid and accurate zone file accessible to the average internet user at all times. Failure to do so is interpreted as a problem with the proper operation of the domain. So, 5.3.2.2. I see no hands. I hear no comments.
There doesn't appear to be any questions, so please continue, Betty.
Okay. I personally felt that 53.21 touched on what Martin was talking about in as far as we can go under Section 3.5. I see Yap as a comment, and he always has some interesting references. So, over to Yap.
Okay, found mute button. What it says in 5.3.2.2.2 is something that a lot of current CCTLD operators and managers don't allow. I know that most CCTLD operators don't allow the file accessible to the average Usenet user at all times. When you start a year policy,
I was trying to be clear that it must be accessible for resolving domain names. So, you know, maybe we need to clarify what the intent is here, but it's not a question of giving users the zone file or have access to the core zone file, but I'm talking more about the process of resolving requests.
Yeah, okay, good point though, yeah, and so definitely some need for further, drafting there to clarify.
And let's not forget, this is our first reading, and as per usual on our first reading for new text, especially new text that Bernie has written, we can beat the crap out of it, that's fine, no problem. As usual, what I'm aiming for is the general concept, and comments like YAPS are very useful for making sure that we zoom in exactly on what we're trying to say. But yeah, definitely not trying to create new policies, just trying to clarify that the zone file has to be available for resolving domain names for the standard mechanism. So, are we okay on 5322, or do we have other comments?
Everyone else is... Nigel wants to have a comment. Nigel, you're on mute.
If we rephrase 2.2.2 to clarify what's meant, in other words, that it's available on the root, not that it's available for AXFR, then I'm happy.
I think that point's already noted by Bernie, so, yeah. Thanks, Nigel. No other comments, so carry on, Bernie.
Thank you, sir. We'll move on to 5323. This includes keeping the central IR, in case of top-level domains, or other higher-level domain manager, advise of the status of the domain, responding to requests in a timely manner. Interpreted as a component of doing a satisfactory job, requires responding to the IANA contractor requests in a timely manner. So, basically, we're teasing out that specific chunk, which is quoted here, in saying, this is a requirement for doing a satisfactory job. It's probably a key requirement that you respond to IANA requests in a timely manner. We'll be glad to take questions. And I see Nigel up there.
Nigel, you must be on mute, I think.
Again.
I'm having some concerns about 5323, and I'm conscious of the fact that both Becky and Eberhardt are not on the call. But I can see some potential problems with the reinterpretation of our interpretation here. I think the actual text of 1591, which reads the italicized bit in 5.3.2.3, is somewhat... it's opaque, it's difficult to understand what it means. What I think the intent of it is that the ccTLD manager must keep the IANA informed of the fact that the domain is running and who the contacts are and so on and so on. Responding to requests in a timely manner, however, is all dependent on, if you want to misquote Bill Clinton on this, that all depends on what the definition of the word is. In this case, it depends on the definition of what requests is. I've got some concerns about this, and I don't agree with the proposed text, but I don't have a proposed alternative at this time.
Hi, Joel. Are you saying that we're not talking about IANA requests, but requests to the zone file?
It's a possible. I'm saying I don't know. What I'm saying is that there have been incidents of the IANA taking what appear to be precipitate action based on the fact of just not getting a reply to an email, and I'm being very, very worried that what you've written or what we've written here as an interpretation could be reinterpreted. The answer is I don't know what this phrase means. I'm not sure the author knew what it meant, but
okay, so
I don't agree, and I don't like what you've written.
Okay, fair enough. I can see the point, because on the tail end of that original quote, what we've got, just to go over it again for everyone, not removing it from the paragraph where it's found, is in 5312. And it goes, that is, the actual management of the assigning of domain names, delegating subdomains, and operating name servers must be done with technical competence. Full stop. This includes keeping the central IR, in the case of top-level domains, or other higher-level domain manager, advised of the status of the domain, responding to requests in a timely manner, and operating the database with accuracy and robustness. So, fair enough. I can see both of those, and I think this is one of those we're going to have to walk our way through to get to some sort of common understanding of that. But I agree that we can actually take that one way or another, or maybe even both. So noted. Are there any other questions?
Yeah, Bernie, just to follow up on that, reading the language that's used and putting myself back into 1994, or in my case 1996, but the central IR doesn't mean the IANA. It means Arin or Ripe.
That is correct.
Which adds a complication to the mix here.
Agreed. So just more that we're going to have to slog through. But I think at the end I get the feeling that if we can actually tease out what is meant here, we'll be better off for understanding other things, because as a section it's not very long and has very clear implications, and may allow us to remove some ambiguity for those that are going to have to use the results of our work. So, there we go. That was 5323. Any other comments?
We'll note that needs further work, and trying to remove the ambiguity in it might be quite a challenge, but no, please move on, Penny.
Thank you, sir. Moving on to 5324, there must be a primary and a secondary name server that have IP connectivity to the Internet and can be easily checked for operational status and database accuracy by the IR and the IM. So I think we're sort of clear that we are talking about the IANA in this case. So, what have we come up with under this one? Failure to have a primary and secondary name server that have IP connectivity to the Internet is interpreted as a problem with the proper operation of the domain. I don't think this one is going to stretch anyone's brain too far. I'm hoping that's okay. 53242, easily checked. Database accuracy by the IR and IANA. Now, that's going to create all sorts of concerns. The database should be interpreted as the DNS zone file for the domain. 53.24.22 accuracy of the database is interpreted to mean a faithful representation of the DNS information associated with the main names registered in the CCTLD. Now, the term faithful, there's a note here, the term faithful is used in the Oxford Dictionary definition of accurate. So that's where that comes from. Failure to have an accurate zone file is interpreted as a problem with the proper operation of the domain. And closing off this section in 53.24.24, failure to allow the IANA contractor to easily check the accuracy of the zone is interpreted as, whoa, someone switched my screen, sorry.
Yeah, no, Christina's scrolling to enable Chris to see the text, and then she'll...
I'm sorry, I apologize. I'm really being a pain in the neck here. I apologize.
It's all about you, Chris. It's okay.
It is all about me. You are correct.
53.24.24, failure to allow the IANA contractor to easily check the accuracy of the zone file is interpreted as a problem with the proper operation of the domain. Yes, I see Nigel's X up there, and I see Martin coming up. So, as I said, I knew that we would be getting into this before we get into the discussion, since I have the floor. I will use this to say I was only trying to interpret the words in 53.24 and that we're not talking about or a method or what actually happens to do this. So I'll turn it over to you, sir, for the debate.
Okay, yeah, that's, isn't that interesting that Adobe Connect, when you've got the red cross, you can't actually see the hand raised as well, but Nigel's hand is actually raised. Anyway, we have a speaking order of Martin, Nigel, and Stephen. So, Martin, firstly.
Thanks, Keith. First, a fairly trivial comment. I'm not sure I particularly find it useful in 2.2 to substitute the word faithful and then explain that faithful is just a synonym for accurate. Why don't we just say it's interpreted to mean an accurate representation of the DNS information associated with the domain names? I know it looks very circular, but you know, that's what we're actually doing. We're trying to make sure that there's an accurate representation of that information. The main reason, though, I raised my hand is on inevitably 2.4. And I've got no idea how the IANA contractor would be able to take his own file and then systematically check the accuracy of the zone file. But certainly I don't think we as an operator would even vaguely agree with the idea of providing IANA with our zone file, something that we actually do keep very carefully guarded. So it just seems to me that what we're doing is we're taking a sort of terminology about the importance of maintaining the zone file and ensuring it is accurate, and then somehow you know, and then easily check for operational status and database accuracy to then give a role for providing the database for that to happen without there necessarily being any obvious clear reason as to why that should be done. But I actually go back to my initial statement. I've got no idea at all how IANA would take a zone file of 10 million names or more and work through and then define whether it was accurate or not, because you know inevitably there will be inaccuracies in the zone file database. Thanks.
Thanks, Sir Martin. My guess is that they would do a measurement of the number of lame domains, and that's about all they could do, but fully agreeing that most CCTLD operators would not be particularly happy to hand over their zone file to IANA for such purpose. You know, it gives rise to some issues with this for sure. I see Nigel has got a green tick, and so we now have Nigel and Martin probably in quite strong agreement. But Nigel, you were next on the list, so please go ahead.
Thank you, Keith. I won't go into too much detail as to why I agree with Martin. It's probably for different reasons, so, but it doesn't really matter. Nominet, back in the day, was one of the major CCTLD managers that actually resisted ICANN's peremptory demands to have our zone files and even our customer databases, which is the logical conclusion. The only way you can check for accuracy of the zone file is to have the customer database, including what the zone file is supposed to have in it, as well. So I'm in agreement with Martin on this, but I'll be honest with you, Bernie. I think I've got a problem with the whole approach of this. I think we are over-interpreting, and it's leading us down paths. I mean, this is the second time in 10 or 15 minutes that it's led us down a path here. I don't think we should be trying to get a list of problems with the proper operation of the domain, which is what seems to be coming out of the current document. I think whether there is a problem with the operation of the domain is a matter of fact on the case concerned. I don't think we should be providing a menu of possible examples, even if they're non-exclusive. I just don't like the database should be interpreted as the DNS zone file for the domain. Well, that's probably true, actually. But I just don't like the style and the way we're approaching this. The accuracy of the database, well, I would say that should be given its plain, ordinary meaning. If there's a problem with accuracy, there'll be a complaint about problems with accuracy, and it can be examined at the time. I think we're kind of, the approach itself is wrong. It should be more high level, more strategic rather than tactical. But having said that, I think trying to get the IANA contractor to exercise a supervisory jurisdiction over how Nominet or we run our zone files is probably something that I don't think is included in RFC 1591, and it's certainly something that I don't think any of us think would be if it was.
Yeah, well, strangely, I think it was actually an intent of 1591 that was superseded by common practice between 1993 and the creation of ICANN, but that's sort of a separate story. Shall we move on? And Stephen has his hand raised, and then Chris. So, Stephen.
Yeah, I just want to echo what Nigel has stated. I think we're going down a path here that really is not a necessary path for us to take. That's all.
Okay, thanks, Stephen. Moving on to Chris and Nigel. And Stephen, you still have your hands raised, so I'll assume you'll take them down in the interim. So, Chris, and then back to Bernie.
I just want to say I agree with Nigel, but I disagree. I agree and disagree with Nigel. So I agree that the concept of creating a list of the issues that could be conceived as being, you know, breaking the rules is not a good idea. But on the other hand, not doing anything can be equally dangerous. I wouldn't want to be faced with a situation where, a significant but nonetheless minor upsurge of complaints in Australia was able to be interpreted as a problem, which leads me towards in some way defining what the problems might be. But on the other hand, I accept what Nigel says. I think it's a very, very delicate line that we need to take, and we need to be very careful. But I do think we need to say something. I'm just not entirely sure what it is.
And I'm noting that Nigel's indicating a tick of agreement with Chris's words there. So, back to Bernie.
Thank you, sir. And just to be clear with everyone, we've been working together long enough that I think we can be fairly comfortable with the fact that if it doesn't survive, it doesn't survive. But for us as a group to having worked through the exercise, I think will be useful. Because as a minimum, what I wanted to show is we've got that there. And we've gone fairly deep in interpretation of some areas. And the reasons that were brought up by Chris was exactly what I was concerned about. So I'm trying to get us to a position where if we get asked about things like this, we will have some sort of an intelligent response to how we're dealing with this. And I fully understood when I wrote this that I would get the hackles of the CCTLDs up. But again, I am repeating, and I think Keith is correct. Originally, regardless how Nigel tries to talk around it, I think originally this was the intent. Now, what it means and how one can do this, that's a whole other issue. Yes, I understand the concern, and as a group we'll just have to decide how to deal with it. But I'm just trying to position this so it doesn't pop up as a surprise further on the line. I see Chris has his hand up.
Yep, Chris.
Yeah, it occurs to me that maybe one way to look at it, and I've no idea if this would work, but it's, we could pursue it and see what happens. One way to look at it is rather than considering a list of specific things that might happen, we should consider the results of anything that might happen and settle perhaps on a series of results that we think might lead to the conclusion rather than events. Because you could have an event the result of which could be minor and the result of which could be major. So maybe if we do want to go some way down this path, we should consider looking at the results.
Well, I think when I close off this section, this is exactly the approach I was trying to take. So, yes, thank you for that, Chris, and I see Nigel has his hand up.
I'm going to just make another comment on the assumption that we're still commenting on the text as it is. I think there's a pretty widespread feeling that at least the approach is perhaps not the most precise. But I just want to pick on a particular thing, and I'm not going to pick on what any one, but all of these together. But I'll give you an example. You make in 5.3 an uncontroversial example, let's say. 5.3.2.4.1. Failure to have primary and secondary name server that have IP connectivity to the internet is interpreted as problem with the preparation of the domain. Now, no, it isn't. It's not interpreted as a problem with the proper operation of the domain. It is an example of a problem with the proper operation of the domain, but it's not an interpretation. And I think we need to be very precise on how we use the words. We are the interpretation working group. We are construing and adding color to the meanings of words and phrases. But it's not interpreted that way. It either is or it isn't, and I think it probably is. So I'm picking on an uncontroversial one. So I want to be very cautious about, you know, when we're using the word interpreted, we use it in a sense where we are interpreting a word or a phrase.
Yeah.
Valid point, Nigel. Cheryl.
Thanks. So I just want to come in behind Nigel on this. As I've been reading these sort of subsections, there's been, I've always, dare I use the word, interpreted them, as examples and as material for us to have greater focus on why and what is being said. And so to that end, I think to say something rather along the lines of have IP connectivity to the internet is a problem with the proper operation of the domain. That's a statement of fact, I'd have thought, and could serve as 5.3.2.4.1 perfectly well.
Bernie will have got that point quite solidly. Yeah. So if there's nothing else, can we move on? Nigel, I assume your hand's still up rather than newly up. Thank you. Nobody else is seeking the floor, so Bernie, please continue.
Thank you, sir. So you will note that in the and all the points noted, thank you very much to everyone. You'll note, though, that the strategy going back a little above in 3241, regardless of the adjusting the interpreted text, these things are noted as a problem with the proper operation of the domain.
Yes.
They are not interpreted or listed as a persistent problem, but rather just a problem. So in 5325, the first thing that we do is really talking about the definition of persistent. I went to the Oxford Dictionary, and the thing that seemed relevant, and I'm sure Nigel will correct me on this one, continuing to exist or occur over long periods. Persistent rain will affect many areas. Persistent reports of human rights abuses by the military. So we are talking about in 3.5 of RFC 1591 persistent problems of the types that we've got. So I see Yap has got his hand up, so maybe we can go to him.
I think Yap's made his point in text, for the record, please go ahead there, Yap.
I made my point in the chat room. I mean, the term secondary and primary name service are completely irrelevant in this discussion.
I think that's right.
Really talking.
Except that RFC 1591 specifically raises the idea that it's the primary and secondary name service and doesn't refer to authoritative or qualified domain names.
I guess 1591 is doing you wrong. I mean, for the public, it's just the authoritative name server what the public sees. I mean, secondary and primary is only when you're dealing with how you feed the name server with information.
Okay. I guess the point there for Bernie is maybe that we need to interpret that primary and secondary name servers as a redundant term replaced by authoritative name servers.
Right.
Noted.
Okay, thanks, sir. Yep. We have a speaking order of Chris then, Nigel. So, Chris.
This may be completely and utterly off theme, but I just occurred to me, so I thought I'd say it. As an illustration of the danger of using really specific examples, it occurs to me that there may be CCTLDs that don't have primary and secondary name servers that have IP connectivity, because they don't want to, in the sense that they, you know, I mean, the North Korea springs to mind as a delegated CCTLD that may be behaving in a way that is totally outside of all of the examples that we've given, but I don't think anyone's suggesting, are they, that that would be cause for some kind of redelegation. But as I said, I could be completely off beam here. I don't know whether that's even relevant, but I thought I'd mention it because it struck me.
Yeah, oh, that's an interesting point. I see Matt in agreement with you on it. Noted, and on to Nigel. Nigel, you're still muted.
Am I on mute?
You're unmuted.
Oh, now you're not.
Thank you. Just a postscript to Jaap's intervention from a technical rather than a legal or policy point of perspective. The terms primary and secondary are out of date. Even in the context of how you feed a named server, the expression that we should be using nowadays is master and slave. But I think the reason that the original wording uses the expressions primary and secondary, what it basically means is two or more. So let's not get too hung up on the expressions primary and secondary here. What it just means is a minimum of two, which actually by today's standards is far too few. But we're looking at a 1994 document again.
Okay, so Nigel's taking us into interpreting the 50 Shades of Grey now, I think.
Really? Are you sure about
this? Well, he's talking about masters and slaves.
I'm not sure that needs any interpretation, Keith, frankly, but that's never mind.
Well, in the interest of whipping along with some progress, can we...
Very nice, Keith. And at this hour of the night for you, I'm impressed.
And we're suffering a man cold as well. Anyway, Bernie, thank you.
I'll have to recover for a second from that witty repartee. In answer to Chris, the North Koreans do actually have working DNS servers. Where does this take us? Yes, so we were going down our rabbit hole, but still we'll finish it up. Definition of persistent, we had continuing to exist or occur over a prolonged period, persistent rain, blah, blah, blah. So are we all okay with using the Oxford Dictionary definition of persistence regardless of all the other things we've mentioned about this general approach?
Yeah.
Okay. The list of problems. Yes, I understand everything that's been said. Maybe we'll scrap this approach. I still think it was valid for us to go through it to understand it. This is basically a repeat of the things that are listed up there just to cram everything into one place. So I'm not going to go over 53.25.2. Because really we're just talking about the things that we had above. I think the thing that may be of interest is 53.253. So what we've done is cobbled something together to try and define what persistent problems would be. So ongoing or repeated problems, as defined above, which when considered as a whole, impose serious harm or has a substantial adverse effect on the local or global internet community. In this context, serious harm and substantial adverse effect should be evaluated in the context of the IANA contractor's continued focus on DNS security and stability as described in the previous section. So, trying to bring it back, I knew we were going to get a lot of the comments that we got, and that's fair. But at the end of the day, when I'm trying to tie this back together, I think I had in mind some of the comments that Chris was making, that, you know, some superfluous interpretation for minor infractions is not what we're talking about. I tried to use the focus we had in 5.2, which was to say that we're talking a serious harm or substantial adverse effect. So, over to Nigel.
Yep, Nigel.
Thanks. I know Martin from our face-to-face meeting has got comments about this particular 53253, and I'm not going to go into those areas because I think it's up to him to do that. But one part of it leaps out at me as being kind of jarring, I think is the word. And that's the introduction of the IANA contractor here, or the IANA. I'm not going to quibble over which term we use. We shouldn't be looking at what the IANA's focus is, or the IANA contractor, or ICANN, or RIPE, or ARIN, or Uncle Tom Cobley. We're trying to interpret this document. And clearly, we're looking to put some color on serious harm and substantial adverse effect. But, of course, those are our own words. I also have some reservations about this. I know the purpose of it, and I think it's relatively harmless. Might help us a little. But I'm a little uncomfortable with this with this phrasing as well.
Okay, I think Nigel, this is seeking to draw the conclusion of you know, the IANA stepping in, and you know, I think also probably the unwritten aspect of our work is that we know that ICANN has an overarching obligation in its bylaws to the ongoing security and stability of the network, so mentioning it in this regard isn't frightening me necessarily to the same degree as you.
Keith, no, I'm not frightened by this at all. I just think it's slightly off frequency.
I will note
we're trying to define persistent problems.
Yeah, I
would. I would define those as problems which are persistent.
Okay, I think Bernie's noting that.
Sir, if I can have a word.
Sure.
Two things. Firstly, you know, this was based on 5.2.6, trying to keep to the same words. However, I will note that I believe we had agreed. Got to review 5.2.6, so you know, and that involves Nigel and Becky. So I didn't want to stray too far from the words. Kept the same structure. Tried to adapt it to what we're doing here, and that's my general comment on this for the moment.
Okay. So recognizing it's potentially transient as a clause anyway, but Martin has his hand raised, so Martin.
Thanks, Keith. Bearing in mind what Nigel said about me having problems with this, actually I don't particularly have great problems with this. I agree with his points about the IANA role coming in, but if we have the scope limited as people seem to want for Section 3.5 of RSC 1591 and for this section, then you know, it that actually does put very clearly into this into context. I think the only bit that does give me sort of slight cause for concern is that the last paragraph of 3.5 doesn't actually specifically make mention to the IANA contractor. I think we're implying that it does, but if I were to pick up on the Chris's comment about North Korea earlier, you know, well, is the IANA contractor? never turn around and revoke the delegation in North Korea? My guess is no, and therefore the specific link into IANA is in this. There's another reason there why perhaps that is actually inappropriate. Thanks.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Matt. Back to Bernie, I think.
Thank you, sir. All great comments, folks. So thank you for that. As with our first cut of text, I think this has been soundly and solidly beaten into some sort of submission, and we'll have obviously a major rewrite if the approach survives. So we're done with the new text. We move on to 533 with the definition of revocation. I don't think we should go into it. Nigel has provided some new text. As I was editing it, I ran into a few bumps and wanted to go over them with Becky and have not had a chance. So, Nigel, I haven't forgotten about that good contribution. When I was trying to adapt it, I came up with a couple of questions, and I thought I should check them with Becky before bugging you with them, and we will do that, I guess, over the next couple of weeks. So I don't really see the point of spending time on 5.3. It's also the same text that we find in 5.2.4, and we know we've got to rewrite some parts of that.
Nigel has his hand raised and is sort of ticking in agreement as well. So Nigel's removed his hand now, so he's just indicating general agreement. So is there anything in the document that anyone else would like to cover at this stage, or shall we consider the first reading of the new text of 5.3 as far as we could go tonight?
I think we've done the core of what we need. There are a few new words in 5.3.4, but at this point we probably want to get 5.3.3 done. So I would say we will probably leave 5.3 alone at this point. And I will note, as per our face-to-face meeting in Toronto under 5.4 GAC principles, the instructions were to square bracket it. I put a comment. Text is not agreed. Needs further work. I think we've got some of the stuff that we're developing in this area to clarify some of the points. Did not make it in this version. We'll probably finish elaborating some stuff on this with Becky, and we'll probably try to get some input from a few people, including Martin, just to make sure we're getting the setup proper so we can address the issues in the right context. So that concludes section 5.3 and 5.4, and we've got about 45 minutes, so let's keep on going. At this point, one of the things that we could do would take us to if the chair is comfortable with that, to the definition of substantial misbehavior, which I think Martin had some points on. So is that agreeable to the chair?
Yeah, no, that's fine by me. Thank you.
Can we get it? Can we have it up on the screen, please?
Yes, just have to light it.
Yeah, Christina will have to uninstall it.
And reference section 5.2.4. I repeat, 5.24, defining substantial misbehavior. So basically, just as a quick recap, we have general agreement. Martin, I believe, has some concerns. And so we are back on to 524 to see where we stand exactly with
Thanks,
the...
Thanks, Christina.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so it's, it appears to be in the right place and now re-scrollable. Thank you, Christina, and carry on, Benny.
Okay, so we'll take a series, Adam, and see how far we can get with this. So the approach on this one was to break it down. So we tried to deal with misbehavior first. So the working group interprets misbehavior, and I am in 52.4.11 right now. The working group interprets misbehavior in this context to refer to conduct involving the failure of a designated manager to, one, carry out the necessary responsibilities of that role, or, two, carry out those responsibilities in the manner required by RFC 1591. And that's all the stuff above. In this way, it is used in a manner that roughly equates to misconduct in public office, period. Under that standard, by analogy, a TLD manager would appear to have misbehaved if, and now we go into 524.4.111, willfully neglects to carry out the duties of a TLD manager and or, in carrying out those duties, willfully engages in misconduct to such a degree and without reasonable excuse or justification as to amount to an abuse of the trust placed in him by virtue of his or its designation. Full stop. So, 5241.
Okay. Bernie, are we going to stop at that point, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Did you want to make a comment, Chris?
No, I just saw Martin's hand up and thought we should stop, that's all.
Yep. No, Martin, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Keith. I haven't read through all three references that Nigel provided at the last meeting, but I have picked out the first of his, which is the Crown Prosecution Service reference on misconduct in public office. Done that, I've also spoken to...
You're fading, Nigel.
Martin,
you're fading, Martin.
Yeah.
Nigel
you.
May be fading as well, but I
meant
you.
I'm sorry, am I still faded?
No, you're fine.
Okay. I went to one of our lawyers here to ask them about this because I had a great deal of unease about references to misconduct in public office. None of the accepted roles in the misconduct in public office from the Crown Prosecution Service are even vaguely similar to those of a CCTLD manager, which was why I had concerns. And frankly, he was very alarmed at the introduction of this as a concept. I don't think we necessarily need to throw away some of the thinking that was done on the text that was based on what might misconduct actually be, but I would be grateful if the sentence that goes in this way, it is used in a manner that roughly equates to misconduct in public office, could be removed from the text. The other area that I've got concern of is in the next section 1.1.1. So I don't know whether anybody wants to respond to me on the misconduct in public office concern first. I see that Chris has got his hand up, so I'll cede to him.
No, I think Chris's hand.
I agree. I don't think it's necessary. I don't think we need to give anybody any hints or anchors that will enable them to go to a definition when we're providing our own text. So I have no issue whatsoever in taking that out. I think that's fine. I think what's important is what we say it means, not what we think it might be roughly equating to.
Okay, thanks, Chris. Now we'll move on to Nigel, who has his hand raised and was finding the way around the issue that we originally had by suggesting we included the Marketing Public Office. Nigel.
I think this is going to require a little bit of discussion, perhaps, between the three of us, but I don't think it's impossible. I think it's difficult, without referring to the analog that was used, to put any of this stuff in, and we're back where we started. However, what we're looking for here is a definition of misbehavior. And we have gone round the circle with this any number of times where that we need to show that there is an element of willfulness and an element of misconducting oneself. The fact that the words public office are used here for many CCTLD managers, and I don't believe Nominet is one of them, but for many other CCTLD managers, including ourselves, is problematic. Because we are not a public office. We don't have a public purpose, some of us. Some of us are private companies. Nominet, I know, recently changed its members and ours to include public purpose. But that's, you know, perhaps an exception among CCTLD managers that are in the private sector. I don't have a problem with removing the words public office, to be honest, if providing we leave the reasoning that we've taken from looking at the offence of misconduct in public office. I'm not saying you are in a public office. I'm saying this is analogous to it. Misbehaviour is not simply failing to do something. It is willfully doing something bad. And that's the important thing. So it's possible that we could say, in this way, it is misconduct, and carry on without using the word public office, because I'm very conscious that if there are, we say, alert words that bother people, there's usually a way around using them. But so long as we don't rip out where all this reasoning has come from, because that just eviscerates the whole work of the last month or two.
Okay. Thanks, Nigel. Chris?
I sort of agree. I think I'll try and keep it as simple as I can. By making a reference to a third party definition, we run the risk of people referring to that third party definition rather than to our definition. What we seem to be attempting to do is to use the reference to a misconduct in public office definition to bolster our own definition. I think our own definition should stand on its own. And I think by referring to a definition of misconduct in public office, we sacrifice ourselves to that changing over time, to the definition of misconduct in public office to be different in different arenas, and to creating arguments that could be, you know, in my arena, misconduct in public office is X, and in your arena it's Y. And I think our definition in 524111, subject to us talking about it, I'm not suggesting as it's currently worded it's right, but I think our definition in that section needs to stand alone as a definition within the context of that which we are talking about, and therefore any reference to another definition. Maybe it's been on an aeroplane or something.
powerful lot of feedback there, but I saw Nigel, Martin and Maureen all in agreement with green ticks while you were speaking there, Chris and Nigel now have the hand raised. But before handing over, I think I'm inclined to think that what we're saying is we're also trying to drop the word roughly, so the sentence might read in this way: it is used in a manner that equates to misconduct, full stop. Then maybe a footnote about misconduct in public office as a reference point might.
Indeed, I think some examples of misconduct would be useful in a footnote, specifically defined as examples, and perhaps including misconduct in public office with a reference to the territory about which we're talking.
Yep, that might win. Anyway, on to Nigel.
I'm quite happy to adopt Martin and particularly Chris's approach in this. I think it's easy to get hung up with including these words in as definitions. In my original submission, in my original, I'd call it an email, it was by way of explanation as to where the reasoning has come from, where the particular words have come from. I'm more than happy to remove the explicit reference. However, there's one omission in our own definition that I think needs to be there that isn't. And it's by the word failure on the second sentence. I think the word willful has to be there.
Probably you won't get much.
In that event, if we go along the lines of saying the working group interprets misbehaviour in this context to conduct involving the willful failure of a designated manager to carry out the designated role or be blah blah blah, in this way it would be misconduct. I mean, you don't have to shilly shally around it.
No, I think that's right.
And then give examples.
Okay, that sounds not unreasonable. Martin.
Thanks, Keith. Well, as I indicated at the face-to-face meeting, I do actually have a certain number of problems, certainly in 1.1.1, and part of that, as I've worked through it, is associated.
Lost you, Martin.
Yep. Oh, sorry. Did you lose me from the beginning?
No, it was just the last few words.
Okay. An awful lot of my problem is actually associated with exactly what we mean by willfully. For example, if the CCTLD manager is in prison, does he willfully neglect to carry out the duties of a CCTLD manager? In that case, isn't he actually misbehaving in that actual operation without actually willfully neglecting to carry out the duties of a CCTLD manager?
No, he's not. We've discussed this. We've discussed this. Unless he's in prison for a Computer Misuse Act offence relating to the DNS. No, he's not.
Can I...
But he's...
Keith, may I intervene?
Yes, please. I think this was a topic of quite intense debate during delegation, re-delegation working group times. Yeah. But please, Chris... Yes,
well, it strikes me that it's irrelevant. The point is not that the CCTLD manager is in prison. The point is, what is happening with the CCTLD? I could not willfully neglect carrying out the duties of the CCTLD manager simply because I have a team around me who quite satisfactorily, and in fact far better than I could, carries out the duties of the CCTLD manager. And the fact that I happen to be temporarily ensconced at Her Majesty's pleasure really is neither here nor there. It comes back to the results again. It's and given that we are dealing with, in some cases, a CCTLD manager who is a person, Nigel being a perfect example of that.
Actually, the CCTLD manager here isn't me, but that's another matter.
Well, yes, but you know what I mean, Nigel. I mean,
I do.
You know, it's not about that. It's about the fact that the CCTLD itself is not operating properly. So I take Martin's point, I understand, but the mere fact that the CCTLD manager is in prison is not in itself a demonstration of willful neglect, because the CCTLD itself may be carrying on perfectly wonderfully.
Okay, well, Chris is describing Nigel as a perfect example of a person. I'm not sure we'd all agree with that, but it's hard to dispute.
I would.
Martin.
Yeah, I think Chris has caught my concern correctly. It is, in fact, the neglecting to carry out the duties of a CCTLD manager. That might be willful, but it might actually just be because you haven't got the resources, that you haven't put in the investment necessary to do this, not willfully, but just because you haven't got it. For whatever reason, I think perhaps Chris's suggestion that we are looking at this as a result rather than what is actually happening might be the right way round, certainly for me.
Yeah.
And similarly, I also raise the "and without reasonable excuse or justification," that would be, for example, sort of classic one of the CCTLD manager saying, "Well, I actually haven't got the resources to do this." And yet if we go through the explanation of misconduct in public office, the fact that you haven't allocated the resources to do something is not an excuse for your failure to act in a seemly manner. So just those sort of two bits. Certainly I do have a bit of a problem with "and without reasonable excuse or justification," in that, I'm hard up, I'm broke, I haven't got the resources to put into it, could be quite a reasonable excuse, but actually for failing to operate, failing to provide the expected services of a CCTLD manager, it just doesn't cut. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Martin. But I think important to recognise that this is about the actual exhibition of misbehaviour as opposed to an inability for other circumstances to correct an issue with the DNS. Thanks. And can we carry on, please, Bernie?
Thank you, sir. And maybe this is to the core of one of Martin's issues with this text, is his last few statements of maybe, in effect, he's going beyond what we're trying to do with substantial misbehavior. But anyways, we shall see. So moving on to 5242, substantial misbehavior. Substantial misbehavior would involve misbehavior, as defined above, that is either egregious or persistent, and would appear to include 52421, the knowing repeated material failure to perform the necessary responsibilities of a designated manager in a manner that is equitable, just, and or honest, or 52422, performing the necessary responsibilities of a designated manager in a manner that imposes serious harm or has a substantial adverse effect on the local or global Internet community. In this context, serious harm and substantial adverse effect should be evaluated in the context of the IANA contractor's continued focus on DNS security and stability as described in the previous section. Over to you, sir. 5242.
Okay, Chris has the same right to Chris.
Well, a couple of points and a question. So, Bernie, my question is, do you mean by would appear to include, do you mean that to be exclusive or inclusive? Do you mean that these are the only things that it has to include, or do you mean that these are some of the things that it has to include? My question is about the word appear.
Yes, I understand. I will take a stab at this based on my conversations with Becky, but I believe it is some and not all.
Okay. Right, which is not what you said, so we need to work on that. Because we're either trying to give some examples or we are giving a closed case.
That's correct.
And we need to be very clear about which one of those we are doing. The whole thing raises a question around responsibility. If I'm the CCTLD manager and I'm more than willing and happy to do all of the stuff that I'm supposed to do, but I'm being prevented from doing so by my government, where does that lead me with respect to this particular section?
Yes, good point. I think that if you're being prevented, then you're not necessarily misbehaving. Nigel has his hand raised.
Yeah, that is correct, because it goes back up to 1.1.1.
Yeah. Okay, fine.
Two things. Chris has already had his answer to that. In both things, but I'll just underline it. First of all, appear to include means we know the following two things are substantial misbehavior, but there might be other things which are misbehavior which would be regarded as being so substantial as to fall within the definition. So it is non-exclusive. And secondly, if you're prevented by your government from carrying out the responsibilities, or let's take it even one stage further, and this is an interesting one, so thank you for raising this one, Chris. What if your government requires you to behave in a way that we would regard as substantial misbehavior? It's an interesting one, and I think at some point, IANA/ICANN may wish to refuse an otherwise perfectly valid instruction if it has evidence that there is no consent. In other words, it's been done with a machine gun up somebody's ear. But we don't need to deal with that in this section.
Okay. Thank you, Nigel. Chris?
Only just to say, Keith, that I agree with that, but I think we need to remember or keep in mind at all times that there is a higher purpose here. And the high purpose is not to keep the CCTLD with the incumbent manager.
Correct.
The high purpose is to have the CCTLD operating within the sort of broad brush security, stability, blah blah, interoperable internet, etc., etc. And there must be a point that's reached eventually where one says, despite the fact that you, the CCTLD manager, are doing the best that you can under the circumstances, we love you a lot, but the higher purpose takes control.
That's certainly a potential that interpreters of the framework might reach, yes. Yes, anyway, Ken, or Martin has his hand raised. and then, oh no, just Martin. So Martin.
Okay, thanks, Keith. As I've got a footnote attributed to me on this section, I thought I'd better just sort of come in here and identify the bit that I think is still giving me a bit of concern here, and that's in 52421. Which is the knowing repeated material failure. When I went through Nigel's documents, I found in one section a reference to, in fact, it was actually under willful. And so this goes back in part to my concern over the use of the word willful, where it makes a reference to with reckless indifference as to whether it is wrong or not.
We're losing the
agreed.
A reckless indifference of as to whether it is wrong or not is not knowing, is it? So, in fact, I wonder there whether the start of 52421 should be the knowing or repeated material failure, thereby saying, well, okay, if somebody is just indifferent, is just carrying on misbehaving, then that is caught by this clause. The other point is there is the sort of, it's an either or here, and so therefore that first section does cover RFC 1591.3.3, so I'm then reasonably happy with the remaining text.
Okay.
Might I respond to that?
Sure, Nigel.
With respect, Martin, I think you're entirely wrong here, and the reason I think you're entirely wrong is that you've missed the word include. You're approaching this as if those two sections are the definition of substantial misbehaviour. They're not. They're the examples of two things that we know to be substantial misbehaviour. What you said about reckless indifference would also be substantial misbehaviour in certain circumstances. It all hinges on the facts of the case. There might be something which is so egregious that one single instance of it would be so bad as to be to reach the threshold of substantial misbehaviour. We're not trying here to put a completely comprehensive definition of substantial misbehavior. What we're saying is substantial misbehavior is misbehavior that is substantial, and it would include the following. There might be others.
Okay, Martin.
I'm not convinced I was disagreeing with you, Nigel. I see them as being examples. However, knowing repeated and reckless indifference and repeated or reckless indifference not repeated or getting things wrong and not repeated, they all seem to me to fall as subsets of 52421, and therefore the knowing.
And if we want to add reckless indifference as another example,
What I'm saying is I actually think it should be the knowing or repeated material failure, which then allows for that wider scope and interpretation, whereas knowing and repeated seems to me to be rather limited.
It doesn't say knowing and repeated, Martin. It says knowing, comma, repeated.
I think, yeah, and that's Martin's point, in actual fact, is it could actually be an and or. So what about an amendment of the knowing and slash or repeated material failure?
At that point I diverge totally, because that is not misbehaviour, let alone substantial misbehaviour. Mm. That comes under persistent problems.
Mm.
Well, hang on a minute, Nigel. I've no doubt you're right, because you usually are, but explain to me why that's the case.
Okay. There are two sections under which... go to the very top of this. Forget the actual words for a second. There are two sections under which revocation is possible in RFC 1591. One of them we term substantial misbehavior, and one of them we term persistent problems with the domain.
Yep.
We're dealing with one of those two at the moment, and we've continually had problems in trying to separate. We talk about substantial misbehavior when we're talking about persistent problems. We talk about persistent problems when we're talking about substantial misbehavior.
Okay.
So, substantial misbehavior is fairly narrow. It is, to come back to my original submission, it's analogous to misconduct in public office. It's the CCTLD manager turning around and taking something out of the domain because it's one of his competitors. It's misbehavior.
But why does it have to be repeated?
Substantial is either very big misbehavior or lots of little ones.
Why does it have to be repeated?
Yes.
It doesn't have to be repeated.
But that's what it says right here. It says the knowing repeated material failure.
That is one example. The point is, if you want another example which is not repeated, it has to be egregious.
So you're suggesting that what you're suggesting, I think, is that a knowing material failure to perform the necessary responsibilities of a designated manager, blah, 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 is not enough.
Knowing is
egregious.
Right.
So you're saying that if you knowingly fail to act as a good and wonderful CCTLD manager, unless it can be defined as egregious, then it's not enough.
I think that's right. I mean, the point is, we don't want to get too close to this, because unless you have an actual case in front of you, you can't say which side of the line it falls. But a knowing failure, for example, and there are big CCTLDs, I think, that have done this all the time. I mean, there are records that I could produce, and I'm not going to name CCTLDs, where that particular CCTLD registered the same domain to two different people simultaneously. They did it knowingly because they didn't do it egregiously. You know, it was one incident in 5 million or whatever.
So what are you suggesting is the definition of egregious?
So bad as to be obviously substantial misbehavior.
But isn't that... Well, with all due respect, Nigel, if you knowingly do something that is a failure to perform the necessary responsibility, how can you argue that there's a distinction between knowingly doing it and knowingly doing it egregiously?
No, I don't even think. Oh, I almost don't think it has. I almost don't think if it's so egregious, it has to be that knowing. But the point is that there. And we went through this before in a previous call or in a face-to-face. If you're a CCTLD manager and somebody complains that that you should transfer this domain name to another person, and you think it's a reasonable thing to do, so you do it, but you're wrong in law. You're wrong to do it. You did it knowingly, and you weren't equitable,
right?
Just off, because you were found to have done it wrong.
Well, Well, we need to take this offline, but it seems to me that the distinction you're making isn't real. I mean, if you can give me an example of a real example of something that I knowingly do to be a material failure to perform the necessary responsibilities, but that I can argue is not egregious, and you can then give me an example of something that I knowingly do that is egregious, then I'll move to your side of the fence. But I don't see how you can. It's either a failure to perform my responsibilities or it isn't.
Well, we're not talking about a failure to respond. I mean, failure.
Well, no. It's knowing. It's knowingly. Let me put it to you another way, and I don't want to hijack the ball. Can I do something that's egregious that's not knowing?
Yes, I think you can.
Okay, then we definitely need to take
egregiousness means big in this case. It just means enormous. In your face.
Okay,
I think
I'm going to draw a line under this.
Given
the time and given the nature of the issue, and Chris, I think we have been round this a couple of times with Martin, Nigel, Eberhardt, and Becky. Having weighed in, I think I'm not sure if you were on all of those calls, but it's probably worth redebating in a fresh sense with all of us on the call. So let's agree to continue to disagree in the interim and come back to it.
Fine with me.
Okay, and Bernie, is there given that we only have 8 minutes to go and there's a couple of other items on the agenda, do you feel we've got as far as we can with revocation 4.2?
Indeed.
Okay, can we then move on to item 5 on the agenda, which is the GAC response on the SIP letter, and... this is just simply adding a paragraph to the letter that Martin suggested that we do when we were in Toronto. So it's a second reading of that, and it was merely to add a paragraph to say I would be grateful for your views as to whether this adequately responds to the GAC's concerns. So... unless there's any debate on the topic, I think I'm happy to incorporate that in our letter and send it. So it's your last chance to object or modify. So I'll consider it the second reading has agreed to the text, and I will send that letter very shortly. Okay, Well, we move on to any other business, and the next meeting is scheduled for 15 November, 2 weeks' time, at 1900 UTC. Is there any other business, any other topics that anyone has? Anything else at all? Last chance? Okay, I'll declare the meeting concluded, and thank you all for your participation. It's been quite a productive meeting, I think. So thank you all, and good night.
Thanks, Keith.
Cheers, bye.
Cheers, bye.